With CarGurus Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and CarGurus Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder CarGurus is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with CarGurus at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.
It's the Back Nine Boys Golf Show. All about golf, from putting to driving, from hooks to whatever. Now, here's your host of the Back Nine Boys Golf Show, Rich Stiles.
Good morning and welcome to the show. The Back Nine Boys is brought to you by Bridgestone Golf. Play the Tour B ball with Mindset Technology. By the Club at Sea Palms. By PXG, you've never played like this before. By RSM, proud sponsor of the RSM Classic, giving back to our community. By Stitch Golf, dress your game. And by CJ's Italian Restaurant, voted best pizza, known for their best deep dish and thin crust pizzas, plus much, much more. Check out their full menu at cjsitalianrestaurant.com. On the show this morning, we're going to talk with Randy Pyish, the CEO of Superstroke USA. Not only will they be doing putter grips, but they will also now be doing your full club bag of new grips. Bob Winskowitz of Squares will talk to us about how many people are now wearing spikeless golf shoes, more women than men, but he will tell us more about that and the other sports that he's getting into. And Rich Pogge, an author, will talk to us about his Fairways and Greens, a novel book. It's a story about, well, I'll just let you hear from him. But here's my interview with Randy Pyish, CEO of Superstroke USA.
Randy, welcome to the Back Nine Boys. Appreciate you being with us.
Thank you for having me, Rich. Happy to be here.
Well, let's talk about the incredible growth that Superstroke has had for many years, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to stop.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for recognizing that. It's been a great, a tremendous year and a tremendous last 12 months for us. We're so excited that we were able to introduce new swing grips into the market, which have really taken the market by storm with our Revel products, not only from a consumer standpoint, but from a tour standpoint. We're thrilled to have had our first tour victory here recently and really, really excited for what the future holds on the swing grip side, as well as the putter grip side, which is what we've been known for years. So exciting growth.
Well, Randy, how long did you guys do research, R&D on the Revel grips, and then you introduced them? How did you find or work with someone to begin to use it?
Yeah, so great question. Part of what we did, and as most people know, and if you didn't know, about a year and a half ago, maybe almost 2 years now, we acquired the Lampkin brand, which was right. Long known for swing grips, and so there were many patents and technologies that they were using that we now have access to, and we made swing grips before acquiring Lampkin, but being able to use all of their best practices and best technologies and best materials along with all of ours allowed us to create what we think is the premier lineup of grips in the world. And we have different grips for every style, whether you like a wrap style, whether it's just a traditional rubber style, or whether it needs to have some cord in it. We have that for everybody. And we have a proprietary material called Genesis, which we feel has two features that set it apart from any other grip out there. One is that it's a little bit tackier, and tacky is a bad word in most cases, but in the grip world, it's a good word.
It's a good word, you bet.
Yes. And so that's number one. And then the second thing is they tend to last longer than a lot of other grips out there on the market. So you don't have to re-grip your clubs as often. And it really keeps those grips tacky and playable for a longer period of time. So we're just thrilled that the consumer has responded to what we put out there in this way.
So getting into that space as far as grips, was Lampkin on your radar, or was that just something that came about and it gave you an opportunity to just surge past a lot of things in order to get into that space?
Yeah, I think it's always been on our radar. We've had mutual respect for a number of years, and it just the timing was just right for us to combine and join forces, and us acquiring them the timing was right for them, and it was right for us. And as I mentioned, we wanted to make that foray into both swing grip side as well as the OEM side. So there's a lot of equipment manufacturers that put Lampkin grips on their clubs. So we were able to have that business really come to us as part of the deal as well. And so it's been a great marriage. And it's been really nice to be able to, as I said, launch these premier products that, as you mentioned, as we talked about, you know, players like Justin Rose, who just won with it out in California, and to have him give that endorsement, as well as Jordan Spieth, and you know, there are others out on tour that have been testing this product for us, Mark Hubbard and Wyndham Clark, and so to see these guys put it in their bag and then keep it in their bag has been really beneficial and positive for us. And we tend to get a lot of feedback from tour players because they are at the highest level of the pyramid, as you know, and their feedback is invaluable in providing guidance for us going forward about line extensions. And so we're going to be introducing some grips that are line extensions in the middle of this year that are going to be extremely exciting for people that have been waiting for us to have what we call 4X, which is a wrap on the lower end of the club. So if you're a right-handed golfer, it would be on your right hand. What that does is it really takes the right hand out of certain swings, especially, you know, in the short game. If that right hand gets a little too yippy in there, that's way you hit a bad chip shot, or even take a bad swing. So, you know, we've had feedback from a tour player that told us that he likes that in that lower hand because it prevents the club from going left in his case. So if that right hand and kind of swung over and closed the face down,
sure,
he feels like a bigger grip and a bigger right hand grip prevents that from happening. So there's a lot of benefits to tour players, but really benefits to guys like you and I as well that can benefit from that.
And when will those be available?
So they'll be available at retail right around the beginning of June, just in time for Father's Day.
Oh, awesome. That means after or prior to Father's Day, I won't be going left anymore. That's awesome.
Yes.
So, Randy, how do you work with your pros? I mean, do you go to them or do they come to you, or is it kind of a combination of both?
It's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both. So we have people we have a person that has great tour relationships, and you don't get to the putter dominance that we have without having a presence on tour every single week.
Right,
and so
right.
We pride ourselves in that. And so the greatest thing about that is the players out there, even if they're not using our grip, they know who we are. They already know our name. And we've had many tournaments already this year where we have more than 50% of the putter grips out there on tour. So knowing who we are and what we're all about wasn't the issue, but the fact that we were not known for swing grips, I think our name gets a lot of people to try it, but them keeping it in the bag is even better. So us having this discussion saying, hey, what grips are you playing now? What do you like about them? And how can we even tweak them for tour players? And so we do a lot of that as well, and say, we take their feedback if they say, hey,
oh, sure,
this is a great grip, but it needs a little bit more cord. You know, this has helped us design grips that the general public uses based on the tour player feedback. And we did a lot of that pre-launch, asking our players that were using our putter grip, if we came out with a swing grip, what would it need to look like and how would you feel about it? And now that it's out there on tour and, you know, seeing as many as five, six, seven guys a week putting it in play when 2 years ago we had one or zero playing our swing grips really is meaningful to us. And so that's been incredible validation. We've had many college players actually try our grips as well. So, you know, there are tour players that have played for 30 years that they don't want to change anything about what their hands are touching on the club, regardless of that. They just don't want any change of any kind. So we've kind of targeted a lot of college teams too, and we've got several of the top 10 teams in both men's and women's using our grips at a variety of levels. We have the number one amateur in the world, Jackson Koivun, playing a full bag of our grips. So again, to have the world's best amateur put them in 14 clubs, again, is incredible validation for us.
You bet it is. Speaking of validation, how much did your sales go up after Justin Rose won using your grip?
Yes. It was really, you know, it was really kind of a unique thing for us because we custom design a grip for him that he's played Lampkin pretty much his whole life. And we've kind of custom designed a grip that's specific to Justin Rose. And then he got a new driver and he put a Revel grip on it straight out of the box, the same ones that are on the shelf in the store. And he said, I love this grip. It allows me to hit exactly the shot that I want with a driver and I'm keeping it in play. And then he went out and won with it 2 weeks later at Torrey Pines, which was really validation to us, as I said, and just an incredible way for us to say, hey, what we're doing here works, and it works for the tour players. And Justin's been a great partner of ours, and he's very picky about what he puts his hands on a club. Sure. But that's been great for us to be able to say, hey, if we produce the product that you want, he'll put it in play, and he did, and it worked for him. And you know, he's off and running with a great season already. We thought he couldn't get much better than the Ryder Cup last year, but he certainly started off the season with a bang too. And you know, he's probably due for another great year. We're excited to have him in our products.
Yeah, I'll bet you are. Talk to me a little bit about the introduction of the Zenergy TLT grips.
Yes. So great question there. So the Tilt Grip TLT has been a tremendous addition for us. As you know, there are many players now, both on tours as well as amateurs. It's the hottest thing out there. So whether you're talking about TaylorMade putters, Odyssey putters, Lab putters, to have that, what it does is it simulates a forward press. Right. So it used to be in the old days, there would be players that would intentionally press their hands forward to kind of get that shaft lean in there.
Right.
And now the design of these putters and the grip actually does it for you. So the grip, if traditionally a grip would go in straight up and down, right? That's how just about all grips are put in, whether it's a putter or a swing grip. But this grip is specifically designed to go in an angle so that it simulates the forward press in keeping with many of those putter models that are already out there. So us being the leader in putter grip technology, this was just a natural evolution for us, knowing that there's so many forward press or shaft lean putters out there that we had to come up with the grip. The one thing I'll say about that, though, is that it's the only grip that actually you have to buy it in either right or left-handed. Because the shaft lean is very important.
Oh, right,
so if you're
right.
putting right-handed, you need to buy a right-handed version so that the lean goes in the proper way. Otherwise, you'll get a backwards shaft lean, which I don't know if you want loft on your putter in that way. So,
well, you would be leaning it the wrong way if you did that.
You would. It'd be a reverse press and not a forward press. It'd be a backward press.
Well, I know because of your success and having over 50% of the putter grips that are out there, it seems that you have forced other competitors to do some research and technology and come up with their own new putter grips, trying to catch up, which is a tremendous compliment to Superstroke and your team.
Yeah, so it's definitely complementary, and we're always aware of what our competitors are doing. The beauty of our products is that the central technology that we use has been patented, right? So they can make something that's like it, but they
Right.
can't replicate it. And so that's been a very stringent process for us to go through and patent both the material and the technology that goes into our putter grips, and it makes it much more difficult for people to put something out there that will feel the same in the player's hand. So it may look similar on a shelf, it may look similar in an ad, it may be touted as something that's like ours, but there's only one true Coca-Cola, and there's only one true Superstroke, right? There's a lot of people that make a cola that's not Coke.
You betcha. Well said. Randy Paich, CEO Superstroke, thank you for being with us. We appreciate your time.
Very much appreciate you having me on, and best of luck to you this year, and hope you get out there and break your best round with our grips.
Hello, my name is Frank Darby, and Keegan Bradley played for me at St. John's. I was fortunate to recruit him and coach him there as well. And you're listening to the Back Nine Boys here, their podcast. It's been fun being on.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. We're with Bob Winkowitz, who is the CEO of Squares. Bob, welcome, my friend, back to the show.
Rich, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, you've been busy. We just talked about how busy you were. But first, let's talk about what's going on in the golf shoe business. You have just come out with Spikeless, and already you have found out some research that I was unaware of. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I had really fought getting into the spikeless world. And the reason for that is because I always believed as a traditionalist, you need cleats on the bottom of your shoes for better traction on the course and better ground force production. But what happened was the industry really shifted. About 64% of the marketplace now is spikeless. So that means the consumer wants a spikeless shoe. So we did a lot of research over the last 2 years and finally launched about a month ago a new spikeless shoe that's got about 260 nubs on the bottom of the shoe. And those nubs are in a rotational pattern. So it really facilitates the movements in golf, but it also gives you really good traction. And it's a lightweight type of shoe. It's got a breathable upper mesh and it's got the standard comfort and stability you'd expect out of any one of the Squares models.
And when we were talking previous, you said more women want the spikeless shoe than men. The stats
Yeah.
are even higher.
Yeah, it's about 80%.
Wow.
And again, I think it's the comfort thing mostly, but I think too, it's the versatility. A lot of women like to wear to the course their golf shoes so they can wear it on the course and go to lunch after and then do their errands or whatever they need to do afterwards without changing their shoes. So they want that kind of that lifestyle versatile type of shoe that can give you good traction on the course but look good in the grill room.
And what's the durability of a spikeless shoe? I mean, you can't replace the sole like you can spikes. So what's the durability?
Yeah, that is the big challenge with a spikeless shoe, because in a spikeless shoe, you really want to make it, we do anyway, want to make it rubber for better friction.
Right.
And so it will wear. There's no question about it. It will wear over time, particularly if you look at it like you like a lifestyle and the versatility that you're, you know, playing on the course, then walking through the parking lot, walking through the grocery store, whatever you may be doing outside on hard surfaces. So you'll see more wear than you would with a removable cleat.
And we also talked about the main thing about squares is that you're looking for more balance, more stability, and now you're also putting in some new insoles. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we've been doing this research for about 4 years now. And one of the reasons why most players, the first thing they want to do when they get done playing golf is take off their shoes. Well, that's because of foot fatigue. And foot fatigue is really caused by the lack of structure, but mostly your foot sliding in the shoe, either sliding back and forth, left and right. You don't really feel it, but that's what's happening. and your foot really takes a beating, particularly in a sport where you're trying to create a lot of ground force. So, as you know, we launched this shoe with our Stay Put laces, which has silicone nubs printed on the lace. And once you tie them, it locks the upper down comfortably on the top of your foot. But then on the bottom of your foot, we looked at insoles and the foot sliding. And so we launched the first golf shoe ever to launch a anti-slip insole. It's called Blue Maca. And they sell these insoles for $60 a pair on their website. And it's got a great cushioning and energy return on it, but also it's an anti-slip. So think of it kind of as a comfortable foot sandwich that you really make the shoe one with the foot with our new insoles and our lacing technology.
And those are now going to be in all of your shoes for both men and women?
Yes, sir. Men's, women, and in all of our sports. We just saw fantastic comfort, energy return, and the lack of foot fatigue. So we just said, you know, we're going to put this in every shoe we do because, you know, it's an improvement in performance.
Well, you're constantly doing research. You're also looking at new styles. You're looking at new materials that you can work, and you've already introduced some of those at the PGA show. How have those been received, and how are sales going in those so far?
Exceptionally well. You know, we know that players want comfortability in their footwear, and the way you deliver that is through the insoles, through the midsole. And we've got a new technology in our midsole called Energy Foam. And it's something that provides just the right amount of cushioning, but also a great amount of energy return. And between the insoles and the materials you don't really want to expand too much as you're putting pressure on the ground, because again, that's going to give you a loss of energy. You want to provide the right amount of structure. And, you know, we looked at breathability, we look at structure, you know, so in our casual mesh shoes, we have some internal structure to those shoes, but they're highly breathable. And even on our synthetics, we use a microfiber, which allows heat and moisture to escape, but they're 100% waterproof. So, you know, these are things that we study that goes with our comfort package.
What's the percentage of sales, Bob, for golf compared to some of the other sports that you're into?
You know, golf still remains about a $9 billion category. And, you know, we're in baseball now, and baseball's right around an $7 or $8 billion. And pickleball that we're in, it's really hard to discern that just simply because the sport is relatively new. And a lot of people have in the past worn sneakers. So footwear sales for pickleball shoes haven't been really reported, but it's, you know, just to give you some calibration, there's about 26 million golfers in the United States. And the last figure I saw, there's about 50 million people in the U.S. That play pickleball. So the pickleball market is a very, very big market.
But you're also now, besides pickleball, because we talked about that at the PGA show, you're not only in baseball with baseball spikes, but also softball. And the other big news that you just told me about was in the medical field. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we launched our golf shoe about 7 years ago, and that we've won three times on tour. We've got 8 tour players out there. Last year, our shoe got voted the best performing golf shoe by Sports Illustrated. So our shoe is worn by the world's best athletes in golf. You know, if you make it to the PGA Tour, undeniably, you are one of the best athletes in all of golf.
Sure.
In baseball, we have the same thing. We've got players out there. Alex Call, that was on the Dodgers, won the World Series. So we've got about 200 Major League Baseball players wearing a baseball shoe. And think about it, there's 30 teams in Major League Baseball, and what they have, 30 players a team. There's 900 players out there, and we've got a couple hundred of them. So, you know, you say to yourself, it's worn by the best athletes. And in pickleball, we've got about 7 or 8 tour pros that wear it. So my point is this, is that we've got a design that is worn by some of the world's best athletes, and they wear our shoe because it provides better balance, better stability, and better ground force production. And so we took all of the years of learning, and we built a shoe, and we submitted that to Medicare. And the reason we did that is because we saw this incredible performance of better balance and better stability. And we thought that, well, this is something we can address the risk of fall. And the risk of fall accidents out there cost Medicare over $50 billion a year. Wow. And there's some really gruesome statistics that if you are over the age of 65 and you fall and break your hip, 30% of those people will die within 2 years. Hmm. So what we did is we submitted this for the risk of fall for the elderly. So we took something that was developed in sports and we moved over to Medicare. Medicare approved this for the risk of fall. So people can go out and doctors can prescribe this shoe. If you've got a balance and stability issue, they can prescribe this shoe and it's it can be fully reimbursed by Medicare.
Incredible. Just incredible. Let's jump back to golf. Sepp Straka is one of your clients that wears your shoe, and he has had a tremendous amount of success. Ryder Cup team. He's got a couple PGA Tour wins. How did you two get together?
Well, truth be told, Sepp is no longer with us, but he.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, he's no. But you know this. But I do want to address that because you know what? It's okay, and the reason I say it's okay is we helped Sepp in the beginning of his career, and the first tour win he had was wearing our shoes. Then, to your point, he makes it to the Ryder Cup, he wins again, and then what happens is, you know, you've got agents and you've got other companies that look at him and say, "Hey, I'll pay him more." It becomes, you know, and this is the problem I think with golf itself is that you take baseball, a guy goes signs a 5-year, $60 million contract that's guaranteed. And golf, you've got to, you know, eat what you kill. You got to make a cut. You got to pay all your expenses, you know. And so really, if you're not winning out there every single week, that sponsorship money is very important. So, you know, look, Sepp is a great person. He did right by us. We did right by him, but he moved on. But, you know, we're ready to announce a couple of new tour players. And we're really excited about that. And again, like I said, it's, you know, it's a business. Golf is a business out there. And a lot of times if they can find something that may not be as good and they're paid a lot of money, they'll wear it.
All right. What about college golf? Are y'all involved in that, trying to get involved in that? And it seems like NIL is just, to me, ruined football. Basketball in college. I know it's not as prevalent in college golf, but it's going to get there.
I couldn't agree more with you. I think it's ruined the game for in college. You can buy it now. I agree wholeheartedly. You know, a lot of the schools, you'll deal with an athletic director that really gets a deal, so to speak. You know, with Nike and Adidas and New Balance and Under Armour. And they not only get the equipment, but they get the apparel. And so you get these very large apparel companies like Nike and Adidas and New Balance that want to, you know, well, the shoes are nice to have, you know, the apparel is a must have, you know. So it's something where we do have college players that wear our shoes, you know, and it's because of NIL, but still very few. A lot of these kids will sign with a college and say, "Hey, you know, I'll wear what you give me and I'll do that." So, you know, it's a challenging market for us, whether it's baseball, or golf, you know, in baseball, we really market to, it's a kid who is 9 years old, whether it's male or female, 9 years old to 17 years old. The softball business is very good. Again, the college is a tough business.
Yeah, definitely is. So when will you announce your new tour players that are going to be wearing square shoes?
We expect to announce this probably in the next 3 weeks. Yep. We've been testing with a handful of them, and I think we've narrowed it down to two or three we really want to move forward with.
One last question. How do you pick who you would like to work with as far as on the PGA Tour? I mean, yes, they could play. I mean, they have the talent. So you need to look at character. You need to look at a lot of things when you decide to work with somebody.
That's exactly right. You know, it's personality. You know, what type of brand, you know, what type of personality out there matches the personality of the brand, you know, where, you know, we like to market ourselves as somebody that's, you know, a very technically designed shoe. And we like somebody that's kind of, you know, really spends a lot of time in that area. But again, has got a good personality. And, you know, you hear about the real good guys out there on tour. You hear about the guys, real nice guys, family guys, and not to say that anybody isn't. It's just that you try to pick up all those tidbits and say, you know, he's the type of guy. Then when you meet him and you talk to him and, you know, but there's a give and take there too, in the sense that, look, these guys are very, you know, finicky about what they wear. And it's got to be a good match for both of us. Yeah. But, you know, there are a lot of things that factor into it too, which is their standings, how well they're playing. Some cases, how well they're not playing. You know, if they move back in the standings, but, you know, they've got a lot of potential. You know, that's something where you can get them less expensive than you normally would pay.
You know? Yeah, it does become that kind of a game. Give us the website, Bob.
Squares.com, and that's SQAIRZ, squares.com.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Good to see you, Rich. Thank you.
This is Bo Welling from Bo Welling Design, and you're listening to the Back Nine Boys.
Welcome back. I'm Rich Stiles. We're with an author, Rich Poggi. And Rich, you have written a book, a novel, Fairways and Greens. I am a big believer in golf books. Love it. Tell us a little bit about it, how it came to be. And welcome to the show, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich. Appreciate you having me. It was good to meet up with you a little bit earlier. And again, I big fan, like the content you produce and your approach to these types of interviews. But to net it out, you know, I'm not a full-time writer. I've been in tech sales and tech sales leadership for over 30 years, but I always had a little side hustle, as I call it, freelance writing. And I did a bunch of things in the 90s, early 2000s, mid 2000s for TV, for a bunch of different mediums. And then I wrote a screenplay. And the screenplay did very well from the perspective of getting meetings, but the people we had it kind of linked to fell out of favor. And then in one of the meetings we were doing on a debrief, someone mentioned to me that they had spent the weekend with Michael Douglas, the actor. Mm-hmm. And all Michael was talking about was golf. He had played Wingfoot, and it was golf, 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 golf. And this guy was a writer, director. He could care about golf. And I said, well, you're going to see him again? And he's like, sure. He hangs out. His wife, who is Catherine Zeta-Jones, works out with my wife. So I'm sure I'm going to run into him again. And I said, well, I got a screenplay about father and son golf pros and how they deal with some situations. I know Michael's looking for a project for him and his dad, Kirk, who was still alive back then, Rich. Right. This is about 15, 17 years ago. So to make a long story short, I had nothing. I went home. I had a couple of competing ideas in my mind about fathers and sons in golf. I was always drawn to the, you know, the Gary Nicklaus trying to live in Jack's shadow on his PGA Tour run, or Kevin Stadler, and you know, later the Haas, you know, the Haas, one of the Haas sons trying to go after in his own dad's shadow. So I basically put together a treatment and the first act and a character arc. And I called my buddy up, Richie, another Rich. And I said, Rich, I'm ready to go. Let's try and get this to Michael Douglas. And he said, well, listen, I would never email it to him. I'd want to do it a handoff. And he's in Europe now for 6 months doing movies with Catherine. Her career's taken off. And he's like Mr. Mom because they had a child. So it just went on a back burner. And then about 15 years later, I had a little crossroads in my life. And I decided to get back into writing to deal with some personal grief. We had a loss. My wife and I and our community had a loss, a personal loss. And I just, you know what? I said, you know what? I haven't been doing this enough. And I sat down and I adapted the screenplay, Fairways and Greens, into Fairways and Greens, the novel. And, you know, I didn't want to deal with any of being a business guy, Rich. I didn't want to deal with any of the... you know, the lies and just the, you know, the outsider stuff that comes from getting either a literary agent or trying to pitch a query to a publisher. Right. So I just hired a great editor. He's what was at the time a nationally awarded USA Today Times columnist, wrote a lot of sports, wrote golf, and he helped me edit it. And we took about a month after I had the manuscript, and it's been out for about 4 months now, and it's doing real well. And I'm appreciative to folks like you who have me on to talk about it.
All right, tell us the story about fairways and greens and this guy named Doug Parker.
Sure. So Doug is, 56-year-old, former PGA pro. He was a child prodigy coming out of New Jersey. And really wasn't much of a student. So he decided after college, I mean, I'm sorry, after high school, to kind of just hang at home, hone his game. And then he got the bug, started doing the mini tours while a bunch of the people he had competed with in juniors at the time went off to college and had these great careers. And he took a different kind of approach to getting on the tour, mini tours, then at that time, like the Nike Tour. And then, he got through Q school and he had always had this relationship that kept him grounded in New Jersey, and it kind of failed when he was on the road. He had an injury. He did win on tour, but he just fell kind of like, to follow the metaphor, he wasn't hitting too many fairways and greens on the golf course or in life. And at a very young age, let's say mid to late 20s, he just gave it all up. He was an up and comer. But he just gave it all up and retreated back to Windsor Hills in New Jersey, and just tried to get his life back together. So it was more of a redemption story for him 30 years ago per se, but he just fell in love with the game again, and then fell in love with teaching the game and growing the game. His father was the pro there, and then Doug ultimately becomes the pro, and is just living his life, growing the game. Not really missing the tour at all. And then he gets one of those calls about having to go back and fix something from those PGA Tour years. And that's where the story kind of takes off. But I'm really not into, from a writing perspective or from a storytelling perspective, Rich, I'm not into, like, magical three woods or people that come out of nowhere. This is a
Right.
redemption rediscovery story, but from after when Doug takes that call and has to go back and address something in his past, and kind of be the redeemer with a redeemee, it totally is more about life and golf off the course than, like, I was very cognizant. No one's beating Tiger Woods. No one's winning the U.S. Open here because he got cut from the high school golf team. This is life stuff through the lens of pro golf and also country club golf, but also just life in general. And then there's the metaphor of golf kind of intertwined into it.
What I found interesting is that here you have this character, Doug Parker, who had a promising career or thought he had a promising career, gets hurt, gets demotivated, and all of a sudden, as in life, we all go through this opportunity where sometimes you get a second chance, sometimes you get a third chance to kind of redirect and where do you want to go in your life? And as you said in our discussion, it's this book is somewhat about golf, like maybe 25, 30%, and the rest of it is about life.
Sure.
Yeah. Explain that a little bit.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Doug, when we find him in the story, is not really looking for a second or a third chance. But then when he's presented with this situation that he has to kind of be involved in, but there are some strict rules around it, which follow the subplot of, let's say, a Korn Ferry Tour player. Who was living in his dad's shadow a little bit and trying to get out of that shadow, his dad being now a PGA Tour Champions player who had a great career, won a couple of majors, to follow that whole, like, Nicholas, Gary Nicholas, or Stadler kind of analogy I gave you earlier.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is that Doug, whether you're a good golfer or a bad golfer, golfers like to be in control. And when you're out of control, the good golfers know how to get back into control. Doug has lost control of the situation that he finds out about. And then he needs to kind of work it more imaginatively, maybe like if he's, you know, in the rough and hitting it back to the fairway and maybe, you know, giving himself a shot at par per se, if you want to follow the life thing. But just from a life perspective, he can't go out and beat somebody, right, in golf. And this is all going to be rectified. This is all about Doug needing to use all of his skills in life and some of the things that he would also do in golf to kind of affect the outcome of this situation. And even the outcome, we don't know what's going to happen because there's so many rules. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's his round is in this metaphor of life, golf and life, is being dictated by someone else that's come back into his life after 30 years.
So after playing for this period of time, trying to make it and in your mind wanting to be a PGA star, and he gets into teaching, what are some of the satisfactions about this opportunity, his second chance, so to speak, that he gets the pleasure and the satisfaction out of working and helping people with this game of golf?
I think in a lot of ways, he's kind of living those victories over again through those wins, whether it's, you know, an older member who has a hip replacement and he can't, you know, doesn't have the same rotation and he's got to be more of a ground guy or use his shoulders differently. There's several instances where Doug is helping high school players in local championships on courses he played on in events he won. There's another kind of subplot into the whole story where Doug loses his assistant pro, a gal who had some injuries coming out of college and kind of gave up, but through some, you know, teachings and changing her shallowing of the club and using a little more of the ground, and they totally changed her swing to where it became less wristy for her. And now she's going to go out there, and now Doug has to go find another pro to replace her. And at Windsor Hills, Rich, it's not, there's no pickleball courts, there's no pool, there's no catering and weddings. It's a golf club for golfers, right? So I guess to answer your question, Doug has a lot of wins in the life that a club pro lives every day.
So basically he is living his PGA Tour career through helping others improve their game despite injuries or lack of talent.
Correct. Exactly.
Yeah. And you say this book is more geared to men, but women would also like it too because of the story about what life teaches you.
Yes. So it's funny, when I had the screenplay, before I decided to adapt it, I had a couple of producers that I still knew that were out there because I think the story is somewhat timeless. Now, you know, there are this subplot of this Korn Ferry guy, and, you know, whether the Korn Ferry players now with all their lifting and their different coaches are this radical off the course. I'm sure there's still a bunch, but I'm sure, you know, back in the 80s and early 80s, there was more of this. But I still think this story is timeless. But from that perspective, the women, one of the producers said to me, he said, listen, you know, it was right after COVID, Rich. So there was just this huge mountain of content in Hollywood.
Right.
Everyone was spending their time writing. And he basically said, listen, what you need to do here is you need to make some of the female characters stronger. And you also need to write a book because this is not going to get looked at forever. So might as well take that time. And then I started playing around with it. Then about 2 years later, I had that seminal moment in my life where we had this issue with my godson, a U.S. Army Ranger who passed away suddenly. And that really, thank you. But that really inspired me to do the book. But the women characters, the one that comes back to meet Doug from his past, and then the ones who are around them, you know, the one who manages the pro shop, you know, the one who is the life partner of his dad. Their mom has passed away. Doug's mother and Doug Senior's wife passed away. So Doug Senior has a very strong woman character in his life. There are a couple other characters. So, you know, it's like anything else. What I found out about this book journey, Rich, is that when a bunch of my buddies, you know, get the book, buy the book, I sign the book, they have no time to read. So they leave it on the, you know, the nightstand or the kitchen table. Their wife picks it up and they read it. And they're like, you know, I don't know what a gap wedge is, but I really like the story. I love the female characters. What is the pivot? What is the pivot drill? Why do you shallow a club? You know, Rose is doing a lesson and she's talking about, you know, topping the ball. What does that mean? But they do like the story. So, it definitely, my audience for this book has been men and women golfers for sure. That want to read a good character driven story, but also, women and some men that don't know much about golf. So I don't want to say it's universal.
Yeah, right.
They don't know what is that. And you've done this in your career, having done creative stuff. You don't know if someone's being subjective or objective because they know you. But by and large, all the reviews from both men and women have been very, very, very favorable.
Awesome. Got about 15 seconds. Do you still want to make it into a movie?
I would love to get that meeting. So if you go to Rich Poggi, P-O-G-G-I at Instagram, I talk at one of my content stories is about how it all came. So I'd love to get that meeting with Michael. He's still playing golf. He's 82 now. So now he could play Doug Parker Sr. versus Doug Parker Jr. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm heads down on the sequel right now because everyone that's read the book has told me that they want to see what happens to the characters next. But I will give you a little a spoiler alert. It's a lot more LPGA driven than Korn Ferry Tour driven because I want to really, you know, make the women audience get something they don't have. There's not a lot of stories or movies out there right now about LPGA golfers.
Well, Rich Poggi, thank you for taking the time to talk to us about the book. Got to get it. Got to read it. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you for your time, Rich. Have a great day.
You've been listening to the Back Nine Boys Golf Show with Rich Stiles. Go to Back9Boys.com for all things golf whenever you want it. We'll be back next week with an all-new Back Nine Boys at Back9Boys.com.